Welcome to the August 2nd service of the Unitarian Universalist Congregation in Blacksburg, Virginia. Our virtual service today is led by Worship Associate Stephen Henninger. The sermon, titled Zen and the Mystery of Life, is delivered by guest speaker Ellen Bricks. During the meditation, there was a few minutes of silence, and that is in the podcast as well. Because the podcast is publicly accessible, the announced joys and sorrows are not included for privacy considerations, and the music is not included because of copyright restrictions. They are both included in the video. If you wish to watch the video and do not get the Sunday UUC announcements, contact the UUC administrator for the link.
Good morning and welcome. I'm Stephen Henninger, your worship associate today. First, before we get into announcements, I'd like to welcome our guest speaker today, Ellen Bricks. Ellen Roshi is a Zen teacher in the White Plum lineage and co-founder of the New River Zen community here in Blacksburg. Ellen is the author of Healing Zen and Selfless Love, and also the co-author with her husband, Charles, of Waking Up Together. Ellen's latest book is Embracing the Inconceivable, Inner Spiritual Practice of Zen and Christianity. This book is a guide for people who wish to integrate their practice of Christianity with Eastern forms of meditation and mindfulness. Ellen holds a PhD in psychiatric nursing from the University of Texas at Austin and is a professor emerita at Radford University, where she taught nursing for 32 years. Welcome, Ellen, and thank you for being with us this morning. I'd also like to hold up a few announcements. Next Sunday, August 9th, will be a poetry service. We are still looking for readers and poems, and if you're interested in being either one of those, please reach out to Alyssa Short. The worship team is also collecting photos for our annual water service later this month. Please send a photo or two of your favorite spot with water to me, Stephen. And as always, please see the weekly announcement email for more opportunities to engage. And as you light your candle or chalice at home, please join me in the words that are printed on your screen. We light this chalice for the warmth of welcome, the light of hope, and the fire of service. Today's opening words are entitled Grace Meets Us Where We Are and are from Rev. Gretchen Haley from the Foothills Unitarian Church in Fort Collins, Colorado. There is nothing you need to bring with you to be welcome here. No right beliefs or proof of citizenship. No eternal optimism or clarity of conviction. No boundless courage or endless expertise. You do not need to know what brought you here, or how you will solve that problem you are turning over and over and over in your mind. Your bills do not need to be paid, and your checkbook can be a mess. Your children may have been up half the night. Your hearing aids may not be working, and your knees may be creaking. You do not need to be already perfect, or even halfway, to belong in this circle where grace meets us where we are, but does not leave us as it found us, where love resides in each of us, yet is somehow more than all, where life still pulses and rages and heals and transforms, creating us and this day anew once again. Come, let us worship together. Our weekly offering is a reminder and a ritual that we are part of the interconnected web of life. Each week, our congregation gives half of our collection plate to a local or UU-affiliated organization committed to doing good works. This week's recipient is the New River Community Action's Swift Start program that helps working parents in the New River Valley secure higher wage jobs by providing skill development and acquire affordable, quality childcare. Please give through our Give Plus app or text fund to 844-909-2617. If you have never used these, look at your order of service and the announcements for more information. You'll be able to give after the service as well. I now invite Alan Bricks to lead us in a meditation.
This morning, I think we'll do a brief Zen meditation because that's what I'll be talking about in the sermon today. Zen meditation is a silent, wordless meditation, so I'm going to give 1 or 2 minutes of instruction up front, and then I'll ring the bell 3 times and we'll sit in silent Zen meditation for 5 minutes, and I'll ring the bell twice at the end of meditation. In Zen meditation, we sit up straight and alert and awake. And we're going to start out with posture. I'm going to instruct about posture because we're awake and alert, not just with the mind and the head, but with every cell in the body. So I invite you to sit up straight if you can. If you can, if you want to, move to the front of your chair so that your feet can be flat on the floor, about hip distance apart. And tilt the pelvis forward just slightly. This opens the abdomen, lift the chest, lower the shoulders, sit with your head straight over your shoulders, ears straight over your shoulders, and kind of lift the crown so you're sitting nice and straight in your chair. And this is a relaxed, balanced posture, not a rigid posture, but we're sitting up nice and straight. And our hands can rest in our lap. You can just put palms up, one palm over the other, just resting in your lap. And during Zen meditation, the eyes are actually open. They're slightly open, cast down toward the floor at about a 45 degree angle, not particularly focused on anything. And during meditation, what we do is we let go of all thoughts, concepts, emotions, images, ideas of any kind, and we let our awareness just be with the natural breathing, the belly rising gently on inhalation and receding gently with each exhalation. And when the mind wanders off in thought, we don't try to push out the thought, we just gently bring our awareness back to the breathing. Just the movement of the belly expanding on inhalation and receding with exhalation. And it's very simple. We don't try to regulate the breath in any way. We just let our awareness be on relaxed, natural, abdominal breathing. So now we'll try this. And I'll start by ringing the bell for 3 times.
arms.
Today we have two readings, one from Leviticus and the other, the Heart of Perfection of Great Wisdom Sutra. From Leviticus, count off 7 Sabbath years, 7 times 7 years, so that the 7 Sabbath years amount to a period of 49 years. Then have the trumpet sounded everywhere on the 10th day of the 7th month. On the Day of Atonement, sound the trumpet throughout your land. Consecrate the 50th year and proclaim liberty throughout the land to all its inhabitants. It shall be a jubilee for you. Each of you is to return to your family property and to your own clan. The 50th year shall be a jubilee for you. Do not sow and do not reap what grows of itself, or harvest the untended vines. For it is a jubilee and is to be holy for you. Eat only what is taken directly from the fields. And from the Heart of Perfection of Great Wisdom Sutra, no path, no wisdom, and no gain. No gain, and thus the Bodhisattva lives prajna paramita, with no hindrance in the mind, no hindrance, therefore no fear. Far beyond deluded thoughts, this is nirvana. All past, present, and future Buddhas live prajna paramita, and therefore attain enlightenment. Therefore, know the prajna paramita is the great mantra, the vivid mantra, the best mantra, the unsurpassable mantra. It completely clears all pain. This is the truth, not a lie. So set forth the Prajna Paramita mantra. Set forth this mantra and say, gone, gone, gone beyond, fully beyond, awake, rejoice. Prajna Heart Sutra. And now I am pleased to have Ellen Burks give our sermon this morning. Ellen?
Good morning. I'm happy to be with you on Zoom this morning. I call it Zoom Zen. And I'm going to be talking about Zen this morning. But I want to start out this morning with a very short story from my great, great, great aunt, Anna Howard Shaw. And this story took place when she was 10 years old. Aunt Anna went on to become a protege of Susan B. Anthony, and she traveled all over the country as an orator for the cause of women's right to vote. This story took place in 1857, and she was living in Lawrence, Massachusetts at the time. And she writes, and I'm going to share this in her own words, "At the tender age of 9 and 10, I became interested in the abolition movement. We were Unitarians, and many of the prominent citizens of Lawrence, Massachusetts, belonged to the Unitarian Church. One day, on visiting our cellar, I heard a noise in the coal bin. I investigated and discovered a Negro woman concealed there. I had been reading Uncle Tom's Cabin, as well as listening to conversation of my elders. So I was stirred over the Negro question. I raced upstairs in a condition of awestruck and quivering excitement, which my mother promptly suppressed by sending me to bed. No doubt she questioned my youthful discretion, for she wisely kept me close to her for several days until the escaped slave my father was hiding was safely out of our house and away. Discovering of this serious event might have borne grave consequences for him." I share this story as an example of the fact that Unitarians and now UUs have been working on racial justice issues facing our country for well over 150 years. My talk today is offered as encouragement to keep going in a wise and loving way. I, like Aunt Anna, believe in the power of the pen. So I spent last year writing my latest book, which was released just now in March during the pandemic. And the title is Embracing the Inconceivable, Interspiritual Practice of Zen and Christianity. The book shows how Zen as a path of meditation and Christianity as a path of love are mutually enriching and expanding spiritual practices. And the book is aimed at liberating and guiding people who practice in more than one tradition, whether by birth or by marriage or by choice, and to help people not to feel pressured into having to choose just one tradition. Again, you youths are ahead of the ball in this game as well. They've long felt liberated to integrate wisdom from multiple traditions from around the world. And so this talk is just more grist for the mill. And it emphasizes the importance of going beyond the intellect to direct experience, to experience for yourself. Zen meditation is a particular type of mindfulness aimed at the direct experience of non-duality and the inconceivable mystery of life. Many people these days practice mindfulness to relax, to manage stress, and to be more focused and present in their daily life. The word Zen has come into common usage in our culture today, meaning a calm state of equanimity. And it's also gaining popularity because of its simple, natural, uncluttered aesthetic, which is very soothing and ecological. Zen, like other forms of mindfulness, can reduce anxiety and reduce depression and improve sleep. But all of these wonderful effects are not the primary reason for practicing Zen. Zen is a spiritual practice that brings us face to face with that which is of ultimate concern. Zen calls the ultimate by many names, such as the absolute, ultimate reality, emptiness, suchness, thusness, sometimes words like the old fellow, and most often simply it. In Western traditions, ultimate reality is most often called God, or the infinite, or the divine. During Zen meditation, we sit silent and still, open to that which is beyond anything we could possibly imagine. And so we let go of all thoughts, concepts, emotions, stories, opinions, theories, and images. And we open to that which is beyond what the human intellect can grasp. And we experience undivided wholeness from which we're not separate. Undivided wholeness from which love arises. In Zen, this experience is called non-duality, which simply means not two, not separate. We transcend all divisions, all dualities, such as body and mind, subject and object, inside and outside, center and periphery, self and other, us and them. This insight is expressed most succinctly in the Heart Sutra, a portion of which we just heard. In another section, it says, form is no other than emptiness. Emptiness is no other than form. And this means that everything in the universe, including you and me, is a manifestation of ultimate reality. Zen Master Dungshan said this most clearly when he said, "He surely is me, but I am not him." And in saying this, Dungshan meant that he himself is a manifestation of ultimate reality or God. You are a manifestation of ultimate reality or God. I am, and all of creation is a manifestation of ultimate reality and God. And yet, ultimate reality or God are greater, Dungshan said, but I am not him. And that means ultimate reality is greater than Dungshan, greater than you, greater than me, greater than the sum of all creation. And this realization puts the ego in its proper place with respect to ultimate reality or God. This insight liberates us from the domination of the ego. Now, the ego is not the enemy. It helps us function, but it needs to be seen in its proper perspective. It doesn't need center stage at all times. We can see beyond it and be liberated from its domination. So the practice of Zen meditation and this direct experience of non-duality can be helpful during these times of pandemic and division in our country. During these days of social distancing, people can begin to feel confined and isolated. But we can flip the way we're looking at this situation. We can look at it in another way. And that's why today we heard a reading from the book of Leviticus, chapter 25, that talks about a jubilee year every 50 years. And I decided that this year for me would be a jubilee year. And I think this is a helpful way to look at it. A jubilee year was a time when all the captives are set free, including ourselves. It's a time of rest for the people and the land. It's a time to live simply and to turn our attention toward spiritual matters. So during this year, without the distraction of many of our usual activities, we have more time to meditate. We have more time to look deeply for ourselves at matters of ultimate concern. Well, let's take a look at a Zen koan. This koan is case 86 from the Blue Cliff record. Zen Master Uman said, "Everybody has his own light. If he tries to see it, everything is darkness. What is everybody's light?" Light is not an object or a thing. You are not an object or a thing, not a separate or fixed thing. You are a unique expression of ultimate reality, emptiness, the light of the world, God, whatever you choose to call it. And this koan helps us look simultaneously at our own light and at everybody's light. And it's like Buddha, who at the time of his awakening exclaimed, "I, the great earth, and all beings simultaneously achieve the way." When non-duality, non-separation, wholeness becomes an experience for you and not just a thought, it's a soothing balm, especially during these times of physical separation. It's a liberating insight that I think is expressed really well by Shakespeare in the words of Hamlet when he says, "Oh God, I could be bound in a nutshell and count myself a king of infinite space, were it not that I have bad dreams." In Buddhism, Greed, hatred, and ignorance are identified as three poisons. Shakespeare might call these bad dreams. The most basic ignorance is ignorance of who you are. Most people are identified with their thoughts, ideas, stories, opinions. Clinging to these divides us and obscures the experience of wholeness, the experience of the infinite. In the experience of wholeness, you realize that there's nothing that you lack. And this is an antidote to greed, dissatisfaction, and the endless pursuit of more and more. In Zen meditation, we let go of thoughts, concepts, ideas, words, stories, emotions, opinions, and images. We disidentify with them and see through them and beyond them, utterly beyond them. And we perceive the inconceivable mystery of life this moment. There's a beautiful verse in the record of transmitting the light, and it says, if you want to reveal the sky, do not cover it up. It is empty, tranquil, and originally bright. I'm heartbroken these days to see the violence in the streets, and it brings to my mind Mahagoshananda, who lived from 1913 to 2007, and he was the patriarch of Cambodian Buddhism during the 70s when the communist-backed Khmer Rouge ruled Cambodia. The Khmer Rouge killed 25% of the population of Cambodia. This was between 1.5 and 2 million people. And this included somewhere between 25,000 and 60,000 Buddhist monks. There were only 3,000 Buddhist monks remaining in the country. Mahagoshananda, who had studied in India and was influenced by followers of Mahatma Gandhi, led peace walks back and forth across Cambodia. He walked through the land where the people were terrorized and grief-stricken and starving, land that was still littered with landmines. And he encouraged the people, saying, hatred is never pacified by hatred. Only through love is hatred pacified. And he embodied hope and love for the people of Cambodia who embraced him. This is an essential message to keep in mind during the current times of division and violence in our country. There's plenty of vitriol and hatred and name calling on both sides. And it's so important for us to see clearly that hatred is a poison and boundless love the antidote. I'd like to share some words of caution from my favorite Russian novelist, Eugene Vodolazkin, who says, justice without love is not always moral. Truth seldom lies in the extremes of a spectrum. In my personal experience, it's always somewhere in the middle. I participate in the life of my country, but on a personal basis. I don't like crowds. I don't like demonstrations. I don't like general declarations. The Russian Revolution showed that there was no such thing as a truly common goal. In that sense, revolutions resemble a runaway train where you take your seat and suddenly realize it's going in a totally different direction than you expected. These words of Vodolazkin resonate with Buddhist teaching on the middle way and on being a light unto yourself. In his novels, Vodolazkin emphasizes individual dignity, insight, love, and personal responsibility rather than groupthink or mob mentality. Zen does too. Your urge to sit down and look deeply for yourself. Everyone has her own light. Whatever you choose to do about the current situation, look deeply, be informed, and act with love, not hatred. Draw on the wisdom of the world's great spiritual traditions. If you're interested in further information about Zen, New River Zen Community has a website at newriverzen.org that includes a video in how to do Zen meditation. New River Zen Community is a group that's been sitting together each Wednesday evening for 25 years now, and you're welcome to join us. But at this time, we're meeting via Zoom, and if you'd like to contact me at BirxEllen@gmail.com. I can give you the Zoom code if you'd like to join us. And I just want to say that I've enjoyed talking with you today, and thank you for the invitation.
Thank you, Ellen, for sharing your wisdom with our congregation this morning. And now, as we extinguish our chalices or candles, in the words of Eric Williams, love is the spirit of this congregation. May the songs we sing celebrate this love. May the lives we lead embody this spirit. And may you all go forth in peace.